Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology, and I am joined by my sibling, Teresa, and I have a background in social work. I have read all of Jane Austen, and Teresa has read Pride and Prejudice from last season. And today we are going over the chapters 21, 22, and 23 of Northanger Abbey. Yay!
Apologies for us being away for a couple weeks here. We've had some life changes. I've moved a couple times and I also got sick, so I couldn't record because I sounded like a frog. So hopefully less frog sounding now.
Yeah. Should we just dive right in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I just want to know what you thought. Catherine's ridiculousness kind of dialed up a little bit.
I mean, the word that we've used that sometimes people will describe Catherine with is naive. And I don't know if she necessarily strikes me as naive, but there is like a little bit of a childlike piece to her. And we'll get to like where I think that. But as I was reading it, I was like, she's very imaginative and is willing
Yes.
to follow that line of thinking quite intently, which I just think is kind of fascinating, but also not surprising based on what we've seen from her before.
Yeah, do you remember where I was talking about her being the one who was like, his brother would isn't the type who would kidnap me? And you were like, oh, I thought that was the narrator's voice. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure that's Catherine.
Yeah. And again, some of it reads like Catherine is telling herself a story through this. And so it does take on a little bit of that like narrator's voice, even though like this was much more clear that it is Catherine talking.
And Catherine jumping to conclusions, and yeah, I was having the same thought around the idea of whether or not Catherine is naive. And I don't think there's anything that she assumes in here that's naive. It's just ridiculous.
Yes, as far as you can go with it, Catherine's taking it there.
Yes, she's pretty ridiculous in this, and I kind of love her for it.
Yeah. So maybe we'll just kind of go through Catherine's process in these next few chapters. I love that, in her description of the house, it sounds very average, and Catherine so desperately wants there to be something special and spooky and weird. She's like grasping at everything to be like, maybe there's some mystery happening here.
Yeah, everything. There's a chest in the room that she's staying in. And she's just like, why is that here? Why is that in this room? Oh my God, there must be mysterious evil things inside of it.
Right, versus like, there's just a chest here. Maybe you could put your things in it, Catherine, if you wanted to, like, while you unpack.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, I was thinking of that thing when you stay over at someone's house. And there is like a closet or a wardrobe in the room that you're staying in. And you're like, should I probably shouldn't snoop. But then you open it and you're like, ah, that's what this is full of. All of their junk.
Yes. That, or you're like, if you want to border a little bit closer to Catherine, you're like, right, there are no monsters hiding in this that are going to like jump out at me in the middle of the night.
Yeah. But there's like a quality of this where I'm like, Catherine, you're supposed to be getting ready quickly to go down for supper.
Yeah, because they had like 10 minutes, like they had a very short amount of time.
Yeah. Miss Tilney was like, just be fast.
Yeah, just get ready. And Miss Tilney even sends her maid in to be like, get ready.
And Catherine's like, but the gist.
And like spends a lot of time. And she acknowledges that she knows this chest is like not that important right now. Like she really should be getting ready, but she's like, I can't help it. I have to know what's in there. Why is the lid so heavy? Lids shouldn't be that heavy. It's like, no, it sounds like it's just a heavy lid. I don't know what's going on here, Catherine. I really love Miss Tilney's response when she like gets in there, realizes Catherine isn't ready but has been distracted by this chest. And she's just like, that is a curious old chest, isn't it? And then is just like, yep, been here a long time. I think I might put some hats in it. Yep. Nothing to it.
I do wonder if there is a piece of, if you know Catherine, you know she's a little bit ridiculous like this and kind of like spins a story for herself. Mm-hmm. Like her hands are trembling while she goes to open this chest. And I wonder if Miss Tilney just kind of came in and was like, "You're so weird. The chest is fine. Let's go to dinner.
We're late. Let's go."
Like, I love you. Your brain is weird, but like, let's go.
Right? Like, there is a level of it. If Catherine took it like a few steps further, I'd like wonder if she was bordering on psychosis.
I mean, so there's the piece that comes after where she's like trying to open the wardrobe in her room. And I remember when I was sleeping in the basement and the house was so creaky and all of that, I would be like, "Oh, people are going to rob us." And I would try and scare myself to sleep so that my anxiety would shut off enough that I'm like, "Well, you can't get out of bed then." And like, I'd cover myself up. And I was like, that's a little bit of like the feeling of like, Catherine probably on some level knows that this is ridiculous, because she even talks about it, that she knows that it's ridiculous. She can't stop telling herself the weird story.
Is why I say, like, if she took it a few steps further, right? Like, she is doing what I think all kids do when they're, like, afraid of the boogeyman under the bed. Or there's one point she opens the cabinet, she finds the manuscript, but then the light goes out. And so she has to climb into bed, but she's, like, also still really freaked out and just, like, hides under the blankets. And I have vivid memories of doing that as a child and being, like, if the murderers come in, they'll never know I'm here. Well, I'm like this giant lump in the middle of the bed. But in my brain, the blankets were going to protect me. And Catherine does exactly that.
Yeah, she has to hide from her fear almost.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
And I think this is where sort of Henry's playfulness the day before of telling her and making up a story about the Abbey, and Catherine's brain just like took that and was like, "I know he was teasing me, but what if he wasn't?
Right, what if he was right? And I know this isn't actually what he described, but it's kind of."
I think Catherine kind of gets a thrill off being scared.
You can tell there's part of this where she's enjoying it, and she's enjoying laughing at herself a little bit, and she's maybe a little embarrassed, but when she the next morning is like, "But why was it so hard to open that door to the wardrobe?" And she's like, "Yeah, it was probably unlocked, and then I locked it and couldn't get it unlocked again. Probably my own stupidity."
Well, and like that she does wake up to like the absurdity of her thinking and realizes that the manuscript she was going over were laundry lists. This was just like someone brought home dry cleaning and their dry cleaning receipts. And I think it's kind of funny that like if the candle had lasted like 5 more seconds and she'd been able to see it, she probably would have slept fine. And she would have like, because she was up till 3 o'clock in the morning because she was so freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
She probably would have slept fine if she had had that. Oh, okay. And I kind of get that idea when you're telling yourself like an anxiety story and it's late at night and your brain kind of takes over. And sometimes it's like you just need the story to finish enough that you can be like, I'm being ridiculous. Go to bed. And she didn't get that. She got the last second and it freaked her out even more. It's like if you were having a ridiculous story in your head about robbers being in the house and then there's a power outage and you're like, crap, there is actually someone upstairs. Yeah, you would be freaking out.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I have done this. Granted, I was much younger than Catherine, but I have done stuff like this.
And I think that's why the tag of naive gets put on her, because this is such a childish thing to be doing and to be thinking and to be taking this far. But I will say that like I've at 17 living alone from home for the first time, yeah, my brain told me some weird stories, like someone was climbing the outside of the building to get to my window sort of stories, because it was the first time that I had ever like lived alone far away. You're not actually an adult at 17. sorry, 17-year-olds. You're not a kid, obviously, but I try and remember that Catherine's in a stranger's house. Like, she's known these guys a few weeks. She's never been in an abbey before. She's only read horror stories about it. Like, imagine if you were, like, really into horror stories and someone was like, hey, come to my mysterious castle.
Right. Come to the setting of every horror book out there.
Yeah. So her brain's a little fanciful and it runs away with her, and she's got some anxiety that the story just kind of unfolds. And then she wakes up in the morning and she's like, oh, it was ridiculous. And I've had that experience too. Or I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking last night? Why was I so ridiculous?
I do also think, like, there is something very endearing about Catherine's ability to continue to wonder, because for all intent and purposes, what we've learned about the Abbey is, like, it is fairly mundane. And so there is something, like, really nice and endearing that Catherine enjoys being creative. Like, there's a creativity to it.
Oh, yes. I think very much that Catherine is bored.
Yes.
And so when she's bored, she makes up stories, which, like, I think makes sense based on sort of how her life has been so far. There hasn't been a lot of action, but she's read about a lot of action, and, like, she goes for walks and reads books. She was expecting the Abbey to be cooler.
She's, like, kind of disappointed, so she's making it cool for herself.
Yeah, she's making up stories,
which, like, is kind of sweet. I think that that is something that, because we live in a world with less boredom, we do this less often than they might have in Catherine's era, where she has to use her imagination to kind of keep herself engaged and to really, like, keep herself entertained.
Right. She doesn't have TikTok to scroll, so she makes up stories about secret murders.
And that she's going to be part of the secret murder.
Yeah. She wants to be the main character. She doesn't realize that she is.
Yes, she does not, which is kind of cute.
Yeah. In terms of the story, what did you think of the interaction that happened that evening at supper?
With General Tilney?
Yes.
I'll say, because we read three chapters and we hear more about him, I don't like General Tilney.
Okay.
Like, I'm taking on Catherine's perspective a little bit. Jane Austen puts in here, like, three or four times, it feels like, where she's like, Catherine's not entirely sure why, but when General Tilney goes away, she feels better.
Yeah.
And in my brain, I'm like, red flags, red flags, red flags. So I do think, like, he is very strange. Also, he, like, continues to try and compare himself to Mr. Allen. It doesn't necessarily come up as, like, he's trying to one-up himself, but, like, there's this weird comparison that I can't quite figure out what he's trying to get at.
Oh, he's trying to impress Catherine.
Yes, but I don't know why.
Okay.
There was one point when they go out walking, I was like, is General Tilney into Catherine? Like, is he not trying to matchmake her with Henry? But, like, he's kind of like, I just can't read this guy. He's weird.
Okay, so you're having a hard time reading him. There's always been the sort of, like, walking on eggshells feels that his kids have around him.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of pick up on General Tilley was pacing the drawing room, his watch in his hand, and having, on the very instance of their entering, pulled the bell with violence, ordered dinner to be on the table directly. And then he switches in to being nice to Catherine and showing off again after he's been pacing and, I assume, huffing and puffing and waiting for Catherine, who's been opening up chests and stuff. And then he just kind of, like, slips back into, like, I'm sure you've had better than this at the Allens. And Catherine is like, no, their house is a lot smaller than this. He's like, oh, that's lovely. And just kind of keeps talking and is oblivious to Catherine being like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I think this is the point, Catherine's picked up on it before, but this is the point where I feel like Catherine is actually witnessing why they might want to walk on eggshells and the like two-facedness that he seems to have.
Yeah, I did at one point write down that Catherine now knows what it's like to be a Tilney child, and not to the same extent, but like she's picking up that flavor of like, oh, this is what it's like in this household. This is why things are a little weird.
I don't know if Catherine has consciously picked up on it. I don't think she's thought that hard about it, but I think at least to go from this point to where she goes in the next few chapters.
Yeah, not necessarily this point, but as we progress through, I do think Catherine is becoming more and more aware of it.
She's getting exposed to it a lot more.
Yeah. And maybe we kind of move ahead. Again, like there seems to be this rigidity to General Tilney, right? Like his rigidity around when dinner will be and how it should be. And then like when he's taking a walk in the morning and how they should take their walk and things they should do. And like there is this rigidity that he can't seem to work outside of, but then lets it go. Like he's very strange to me.
He is strange. He definitely has layers of things that it's like hard to like see who he is on the surface, and hard to see those things. And I appreciate the kind of the journey that you've been on with General Tilney, and maybe you're also feeling a little bit like Catherine, because when we first met him, you said, I like him.
Yeah, well, because he seemed normal.
Right.
And the more we get to know him, not so normal. You know there's something here, but it's nuanced in layers, so you haven't quite put your finger on, like, what is this?
Yeah, you're picking up the fact that his kids are uncomfortable around him and that you're happy when he leaves the room. But you're not entirely sure why, because he's really nice to you and you don't understand why he's so nice to you. And it's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
You're picking up the vibes. And I think this is the first time where she... Well, no, but I guess the second time, because she also saw him berate Captain Tilney.
True.
When they left.
None of us really liked Captain Tilney either, so like that didn't seem as odd.
I mean, to be berating your son in front of a stranger?
Yes, that is weird, but I think like it maybe didn't register as much sympathy for Captain Tilney as she might feel for the other Tilney siblings, and they're walking on eggshells around their dad.
Right. So then we have the dark and stormy night, and she is hilarious with the cabinet being like, ooh, it's like Henry Tilney described. Kind of. And scares herself.
It purposely kind of puts herself in this situation of being like, I'm not going to put more logs on the fire because that means there will be more light. And I don't want people to think I'm a baby. Like, you could also just be cold.
It's funny because when she was doing the stuff with the chest, she had the thought of like, I'm going to open it now while it's light out so I don't scare myself before bed thinking what's in that thing in the corner. And then with the cabinet, she's like, I'm ready to be scared.
Right? It's like so weird. Like, maybe she's just bored. And, like, maybe she's trying to figure out, like, what do I do with this weird energy in this household?
Well, and I like, it is, like, a stormy night.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Catherine, like, a part of Catherine was just like, this is a good night to freak myself out. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like she was just like, yeah, today's the day. It's ridiculous. She, like, encourages herself to be like, this isn't, like, there's nothing bad here. Miss Tilly's two bedrooms down. And then proceeds to freak herself out about a cabinet.
And, like, slightly enjoy it.
Yeah, she stays up till 3 a.m. Her candle blows out, or, well, goes out, and then there's a gust of wind outside. And then she gets up in the morning, realizes that it's laundry lists, feels really stupid and embarrassed. She's like, God forbid Henry would realize how silly I am. And then she goes down to breakfast and he teases her.
Very sweetly.
He has yet to realize how actually ridiculous she is. He doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand. He just kept her up all night because he told her a story the day before that she then decided was going to be true.
And I'm sure that if he did know, he'd be like, you are adorable.
Right. Yeah, he does seem to really appreciate just her.
Yeah. And then she's like, isn't it a beautiful morning, even though I didn't sleep at all? I like Hyacinth. Let's change the subject completely, please.
Pivot left. I did think the world brought this to me today. I was at the grocery store and I saw Hyacinth there before I read the book. And then I was reading the book and I was like, I like Hyacinth too. I saw them at the grocery store. Because I couldn't tell you what they had looked like before that. I still can't really describe it because I don't really remember. But I remember liking them when I saw them.
Yeah, they're pretty. I just want to add this. This is just for your information. My brain does weird things with words.
Mm-hmm.
So Hyacinth in my head is Hyacinthia. I'm like, I know that's not it.
You're just changing where the A is.
Well, and adding an I. Hyacinthia.
It's okay. I do that too. It's honestly why I hated reading out loud in classes, because I would just change the words or change the order of the words. And I once had a teacher point it out to me. And then after that, I couldn't read out loud because I think before that, I didn't necessarily realize I was doing it.
Obviously, we just have some processing issues.
Anyways, side tangent.
Yeah. And then Henry's like, how did you learn to like a flower? How did that happen?
Which, like, is a weird question. How did you learn to like a flower? Not why do you like a flower? How did you learn to like a flower? It's a weird question.
Because she said, I have just learned to love a hyacinth. And he's like, okay, what do you mean? Tell me the story.
And then she's like, I don't know. I was just there and I saw some at Millstrom Street. And then I liked them.
Yeah, because your sister taught me by having them.
Right? She's so funny.
And then Henry Tilney has a little misogynistic speech about how flowers will help get ladies outdoors so that they exercise more. Because, like, if you like a hyacinth, maybe you could learn to love a rose. And she's like, I don't need flowers to go outside. Okay, dude, I like being outside all the time.
I spent most of my time outside.
Yeah. And he's like, at any rate.
And I love this line that he says next, which is, the mere habit of learning to love is the thing. I'm like, are we still talking about flowers here, Henry?
Let's face it. Catherine wasn't talking about flowers either.
No, neither one of them ever do.
And then he kind of like continues, because I think Catherine being like, I have just learned to love them, was her brain being like, I need to change the subject.
Yeah, please stop talking about last night.
She did not think about her words. So him continuing to be like, has my sister a pleasant mode of instruction? I can't tell if he knows that she was flustered and is continuing to tease her, or if he's just genuinely curious, or maybe a mixture of both.
I think it's both.
And then the general comes in and Catherine's like, oh, thank God, I don't have to keep having this conversation.
Except for then the general just like talks a lot, and this line at the very end of my page, it's probably not on every page, but it says, Catherine was probably the only one at the party who did not understand him. And I was like, one, I don't think that's true that Catherine was the only one not understanding him, because I also didn't really either understand.
Yeah, he's talking about the breakfast set at the table.
And buying a new one, but not buying a new one because the opportunity wasn't right. But it just like seems very strange. So I was like, I also don't get why we're talking about this. I don't understand, Catherine. I'm with you.
It gives me the feel of like when someone's really proud of something and you don't understand why. And you're just like, okay, cool.
I will say, I feel like this happened to me with my parking spot at work recently. I told like 7 people really excited and everyone was just like, cool. And I was like, but this is really big. No one got it.
And after breakfast, it's kind of sad because Henry leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then Catherine asks what Woodston is like. And the general says, what do you say, Eleanor? Speak your opinion. And then does not let her talk.
Yes, basically says so much that like neither one of them can say anything back anyways. So leaves no space for Eleanor or Catherine to continue this conversation.
Well, Catherine asked, is it a pretty place? And he gives her an answer that is weird, because it kind of starts talking about the house, but not really. He doesn't answer her question. And then he's like, hey, this is a family living. The fact that Henry would, like, if that was his only income, he would do really well. Why does he work? You wonder why he works? Okay, so it's not so much about the money as it is that I want my children to be doing things with their lives. So this is my way of making sure that he has employment, because I think employment is really important. You know, my son Fred? Yeah, Fred's working too, because I think it's really important. It builds a lot of character. That's why it's important. So yeah, what do you think about that? What are you supposed to say?
There is no answer to that. Yes, employment's really helpful. So again, is Woodston pretty?
What's it look like?
Like, I'm trying to picture where this guy is physically going. Not necessarily what he's going to do there, but where is he going?
I know where some of the General Tilney's assumptions are about Catherine and part of his fixation on things, but it's very clear that General Tilney values money. There is something about how he talks about everything that's like, hey, my children don't need to work because I made enough money that they don't need to. And like, the family's doing really well, but I also think it's really important for them to like learn to work. And he's like, hey, you know, my dinner set, my breakfast set, well, it's one of these fancy brands. And I'm thinking I might get another one, but I also want to be financially, like, I want to be smart about it. And he just keeps focusing on monetary value.
Mm-hmm. He talks like a rich person.
Do you think all rich people talk that way?
I think rich people who are probably not great with their money talk that way.
So you don't think he's good with money?
Not necessarily that he's bad with money, but that like he flaunts it. He has ascribed value specific to it.
Yeah.
Beyond just like, this is how we pay for things to live our life. He has ascribed money to status.
Yes. I have a particular diagnosis for him that I will throw out at some point. And I think it's funny because I've seen someone else make the argument that this is what Catherine should be diagnosed with, which I just think is ridiculous. But I feel like if I tell you what the diagnosis is, you're going to get too spoiled.
Okay. I mean, I have some thoughts about diagnosis for him, but I'll leave it for now.
I mean, you tell me yours and I'll tell you if I agree.
I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be cluster B type traits. So like more in the personality realm, and either antisocial or narcissistic.
I mean, yay.
For our listeners, Kate was just making a whole bunch of faces and they give that response.
Because there's so many things in where he's talking where it's like this grandiose sense of self, this idea that he's special, that he wants all of this admiration from Catherine. There's entitlement. He's like, some of the other traits are going to come off later. He's kind of not very thoughtful outside of his own experience.
Mm-hmm. He's not great at perspective taking.
No. For me, I think there's a sense of like status that he values. They talk about like the perspectives that different people have on money. He's like a Catherine de Bourgh.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the way that he's talking to Catherine. Very much flaunting, like rich and successfulness. And Catherine's just like, okay, well, I think an abbey is cool because it might be haunted. I don't care about these things.
Right. I don't care about your fancy furniture. I care about the ghosts that might live here.
And I think he's also like missed the mark again. Like, I think many sort of patriarchal white men think that if he really wanted to impress Catherine, he should have shown her his library.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he did, but then kind of rushed her through.
Catherine would have spent the whole day there.
But I think this goes to the fact that General Tilney doesn't actually know Catherine. He does all the talking, and so he doesn't know anything about Catherine, right? If Henry was giving this tour, very different tour would have happened. He would have made up the, like, and this is the corner where things are haunted. Oh, if you pull this book in the library, there's a secret book that opens to a secret passageway. Then Catherine would have tried to pull every book in that library.
She totally would. Yeah, it's interesting. We see another layer right before they go on the tour where he's like, oh, I'm supposed to do a tour of the house, but we should go outside first. You definitely want to go outside first. It's a really nice day. We should go outside first. Let's go outside. And Catherine's like, I don't want you to do something if it's not normal for you to do it. Like, don't, you're making a assumption about what I want. And Miss Tilney's like, yeah, it's okay. He goes out every day for his walk at this time. And Catherine's like, I'm so confused. What just happened?
Yes. He's trying to convince her that it's her idea when really it's his rigidity.
Yeah. He doesn't want to change what he does.
So they go outside and he talks a lot about lots of things and again compares himself to Mr. Allen. It again becomes very apparent like how on edge everyone is when the general's around.
Oh yeah, like the servants and like his kids and Catherine now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do appreciate Miss Tilney. It seems like she knows when she can push a boundary maybe and be like, actually, I'm going to take this walk. Catherine, why don't you come with me?
I don't know if it is her pushing. I don't think these would be considered boundaries. They'd be considered rules, that they are so rigid that they have like moved to this point where they are, if you cross things, you're going to get in shit. And I don't know if she would have done this or could have done this if Catherine wasn't also there, so he couldn't freak out at her. She knows that he has to be on good behavior because Catherine's there. But I also don't think that they would have walked together if Catherine hadn't been there.
I mean, and I appreciate that Miss Tilney didn't just say like, yep, go walking with my dad. I don't want to join you. Because that would have been worse.
I love that Catherine is excited to go on the low path because it looks gloomy.
I know. Oh, Catherine, you were trying so hard for this to be a horror book. I don't think it is.
Yeah, she's like super excited that the general's gone and she's almost shocked by it. But then she's relieved. And then she's like, she began to talk with easy gaiety of the delightful melancholy which such a grove inspired. It's like, oh, Catherine, like the original goth girl.
Mm-hmm. And I love that Miss Tilney is like, I really love this walk because it was my mother's favorite walk. I thought that was very sweet that she wanted to share that and show that to Catherine.
Miss Tilney is so sweet. And Catherine, like I said, the dial just goes right up in terms of the ridiculous.
Catherine is the weird friend.
She's like, oh, she's never mentioned her mom before. Why is this important information? Oh my God, her dad didn't want to walk on her mom's favorite walk. Oh my God, they must have hated each other. He must have been a horrible husband.
She jumps to like the 10th degree. She also peppers Eleanor with 1,001 questions about her mom.
Her dead mom.
Not appropriate, Catherine.
Not reading the room at all. And Miss Tilney continues to answer and like answers in like really sweet ways of not like being mean to her dad, but just like feeling the loss of her mom not being in her life and not having any other companionship than her brothers. And she's like, Henry's great, but he can't always be here. Yeah. Catherine's like, was she a charming woman? Was she handsome? Was there any picture of her in the Abbey? And why has she been so partial to the Grove? Was it a dejection of spirits? And it's like, okay, Catherine.
And I love that a few of them, Eleanor's like, I have no answer for this, Catherine. I'm just going to skip over this question. And Catherine's like, she must have been really unhappy in her marriage.
It's just the leaps that she's decided to make.
General Tilney didn't want the portrait of her hung up because he didn't think it was accurate enough or good enough. He must hate her. Like, no, he might just be grieving. And grief is hard and weird for lots of reasons. I mean, maybe he hated her. We don't know that.
Yeah, but neither does Catherine, is the point.
Right.
She does not have enough information to jump to this conclusion.
Catherine, to me, feels like someone who feels very big.
Yes. I think sees the world from an emotional place before a logical place.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing. Just means that her brain kind of runs away with these stories to fill in for her feelings. So like Miss Tilney mentioned her mother and she had never heard about her mother before. So she got excited. And so the story got filled in because she feels like she's getting some big secret somehow. And it's almost like her brain has to make up a story to fit with the intensity of the feeling.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, Catherine, you've only known these people for a couple weeks, yet it's not abnormal for them not to talk about their dead mom early on.
Hey, you already knew that she was, you knew that much.
Right, you knew she was dead, but doesn't mean that they're walking around every day being like, my dead mom, do you want to hear about my dead mom? I can tell you stories about my dead mom.
I think Catherine kind of wants and craves a little bit of like the Mary Shelley life.
Yeah, she wants a little drama.
I think it's interesting that they get back and the general's like, you guys go inside. I'll be there in 15 minutes. He takes an hour.
Which is interesting considering his time stuff around meals, but then doesn't have the sense of time around something like this.
And he's also like restricted them from touring the Abbey without him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got a set of rules for other people and a set of rules for himself.
And Catherine's convinced that him delaying us exploring the rest of the Abbey has to be something bad.
Yeah, he must have had to go and hide something.
No, he could just be rude.
Yeah, he's been this extremely nice and accommodating guy to Catherine. I guess it like there's a part of her trying to fill in the difference between the guy who she thought he was and the guy that she's starting to see. And there's this weird discrepancy. She's trying to fill in the blanks and her brain can't just go to like, maybe he's not nice. Because he's just been so nice to her.
Well, and I wonder, like, if some of this is also hard because this may potentially be her future father-in-law. Also, how does she reconcile that of, like, this guy could be in my life for a really long time?
I do not think that Catherine thinks that at this point. I think Catherine wanted her romance with Henry to be extended by another couple of weeks so that she could have a nice vacation romance. And now that it's extending into her staying at the house, I think maybe her brain's going to start thinking that way. But I don't actually think up until this point, Catherine has actually thought that she's in love with Henry enough to get married or that Henry is in love with her enough to get married.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. And their flirtation hasn't really been that intense of, they've definitely been very flirty, but it's not like they're officially courting.
Oh, I mean, they are, I guess, but Catherine doesn't know that, is I think what I'm saying. Henry definitely knows that they're dating. Henry is like, no, you're my girlfriend. But it would be like that thing where they would be like out and he would be like, hey, this is my girlfriend Catherine, and she'd be like, I'm your girlfriend? And he'd be like, what the fuck did you think we were doing?
Right. It's been a little while now.
Like, you're at my house. So I don't know if Catherine's assessing things from that lens, because I feel like she would just say that. I think Catherine's brain just lacks some filters.
Yes. Poor Catherine.
From the perspective of like narcissistic personality disorder, you understand why someone who doesn't have a background in psych might accidentally put that label on Catherine, right?
I could see that because, yeah, Catherine does have some difficulty with perspective taking.
Well, so like this might be some grandiose thinking and some fantasy there, but the fantasies don't fit in with what narcissistic personality is.
Right. She is fanciful, but not at the expense of others, but more at the allowing of her imagination to wander.
Right. And that she's not self-important. At least not in terms of her social engagement and social interactions. She doesn't think that she is above other people. We very clearly have seen this in the establishment of her character early on, where she wouldn't believe you if you gave her false compliments and excessive admiration, but she would believe you if you were like, hey, you look cute in that dress, because she knows that she's not as pretty as others or as smart as others.
She didn't need Isabella to be telling her you're the best or like you look amazing or you're my best friend. She would have been content with just like, hey, you're great.
Well, we want to talk about another narcissist, but I just remember reading that someone labeled Catherine with narcissistic personality disorder, and I was like, I don't think you know what that means.
I mean, we could go down a long rabbit hole of why these diagnoses, and when people just look at a list of criteria, you could likely diagnose themselves with anything.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm studying for my licensure exam right now, and you have to read
a ton of clinical psychology and all the DSM-5 loveliness. And it's hard not to sit there and be like, I do that. I do that. I do that. Oh my God, I'm a whore. What do I have? Then you're like, no, you don't. That you don't. You don't.
Yeah, it is much more nuanced than like a book will tell you about it, and much more nuanced than this conversation.
Yes. Well, and like, I think, you know, like we're going to talk about it because that's part of just how our brains are and yeah, the world that we work and live in. But also, like, I can do that because General Tilney is a fictional character.
Mm-hmm.
And I have in-depth information both to Catherine and to General Tilney because of how the narrative gets told.
Yeah, you get a little bit more sense of their motivations.
Yeah, but I'm also not diagnosing him because he's a fictional character. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
But I think on another level, I think it does matter to misdiagnose fictional characters because Catherine doesn't have narcissistic personality disorder. She might fit some other criteria about some fanciful thinking and being someone who's maybe a little dissociative and not grounded, but she doesn't fit with narcissism. Anyway, that was my rant.
Thank you for your rant. I appreciate it. Should we go into Catherine weirdness?
Is that so? Like, we're just gonna like skip most of the tour, which is fair because, like,
I mean, she's weird on the tour, though, because she likes she starts to get suspicious throughout the tour of he didn't open that door and didn't tell me what it was. And like logical people would be like, yeah, that's probably a broom closet. And he's not just going to be like, look, the cleaning supplies.
He's not Mr. Collins being like, look in my cupboard. You see my shelves?
He's showing off and he wants to show the fancy things.
But she doesn't actually care about the fancy things. She probably would be really interested in his linen cupboard.
Yeah, and if it had like some cobwebs in it, she'd be over the moon.
But I don't think his house has many cobwebs.
But in her mind, she's like, the reason he's not showing these to me is because there's a huge secret.
Yes, her brain's in story mode.
Yes, she so desperately wants there to be something going on in this abbey. And there is something going on in this abbey. I just don't think it's what she thinks is going on in this abbey.
No. She wants there to be murder. When really it's just like family dynamics and conflict.
Exactly.
Catherine's weird on the tour. She is surprised by the number of servants there are.
Yeah. There is a little bit of, like, again, that showing off from General Tilney. He also seems to also be like, look how well my servants also live. There was an element to it that, like, felt very much like poverty porn to me.
That's fair. Yeah, that fits his character, too.
These are the things that rub me the wrong way of, like, I don't like General Tilney. Versus, I think Catherine can't quite put her finger on that.
No, and I think, again, she kind of highlights part of the reason that she doesn't really fully understand it is because she's only, like, read about it in books. Big houses like this, she's only read about in books. So to her, it exists in a fanciful realm of things. So him engaging in it in that way isn't that far off of the reality of what she thinks it is. In fact, she's been sold a worse version than this.
Well, and she's also trying to reconcile, like, her understanding of General Tilney in this. And she waffles a lot of, like, this guy has to be horrible and hate his wife. And then, like, this guy's not so bad. And I just wrote down, like, he can be a nice asshole. He doesn't have to be a John Thorpe to be horrible. He can be horrible in other ways.
Well, and in fact, as a human with more power than someone like John Thorpe, he can be horrible in a lot more sort of insidious secrets, behind the scenes, layers of oppression ways.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't need to get his kicks out of kidnapping people and taking them for rides. He just has the power to make people go on those rides with him. Like, in some ways, it feels a little more dangerous than a John Thorpe.
Yeah, he's got more power. And then doesn't show Catherine the room in which his wife died.
Which, like, seems normal.
Reasonable.
But Catherine really wants to see this room.
I have this moment in these chapters where I'm like, I wonder what Miss Tilney's thinking.
Well, Miss Tilney's the one who was like, I was going to take you in there, which also feels a little weird.
I mean, I think maybe not weird because she wants to share her mom with her friend. But the fact that Catherine's like, can we go in and see your dead mom's room? It must be the same as when she died, isn't it? Catherine's just really excited for this morbid thing.
I kind of think Catherine's also hoping that, like, if it's the same as when she died there, maybe her dead body's still there.
Yeah, she's definitely read some gothic novels that are influencing her here. I also wonder if there's a part of her that's like, there's going to be a secret clue that tells me why she was murdered.
Right. Like, she goes into this whole, like, your mom must have been murdered because you weren't home when she died. So it has to be murder.
Yeah, it's weird.
She's so weird.
And she, like, fills in things like, you weren't home, so obviously your brothers weren't either. Maybe you haven't been back inside that room. Oh my god. Did any of you see her body before she was buried?
And all of those rooms that weren't opened for me, it must be connected.
Maybe she's not actually dead. Maybe she's just tied up somewhere and he's just keeping her as his pet.
Right? Okay, what I will say is, as a reader, I think because I do feel a little endeared to Catherine, I'm like, I kind of hope she gets what she wants.
I kind of hope she's right.
Yeah, like, there's a little piece of me. And, I mean, I have been predicting for many episodes now that there is a murder that happens in this book. So I'm also like, I don't want to be wrong. But we're getting pretty close to the end, and I don't think there's enough time for someone to get murdered. Pretty sure it's just Catherine on all these wild goose chases in her brain.
Yes. Oh, yes. Like, that she is so bored that she's making up her own novel.
Yes. Maybe that is what Northanger is. It's just Catherine's writing.
I don't know if she would be this honest. Maybe she would. Catherine is pretty honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she just kind of ups and ups the story.
Yeah. And it gets worse and worse every iteration that she writes.
Yeah, she goes down for supper and she's still thinking about it. And then she's like, you know what, I'm going to get up in the middle of the night to see where the lamps are shining in the house, because I bet it's the general going to visit his dead wife who's not dead. And he's just going to pace her rooms. And then she's asleep. She falls asleep before she can fulfill that.
It's like such a Scooby-Doo plot.
Catherine has some pretty big Scooby-Doo energy. It's like, where Catherine is just, like, going around and, like, peeling off masks to be like, ha-ha, and it's nothing.
Right. She's actually just pulling people's hair.
Yeah, she thinks everybody's a bad guy. Well, not everybody. She hasn't created a story where Henry or Miss Tilney are bad yet.
True. You say yet, so maybe she will.
Which I think is nice, that she puts her boyfriend and her boyfriend's sister in the roles of hero. She's my favorite.
She's just very creative.
I love her. She's obviously not seen Crimson Peaks, where the two siblings are actually evil. Because if she had, that would be the story she'd be telling herself right now.
They're related. They must be evil.
It makes me wonder, does this continue for forever, that Catherine's brain works this way? Or is it just like this very specific moment in time where her anxiety is probably really high? She's at a stranger's house. It's a place that's normally haunted, and there's like this nice little cocktail of ridiculousness that comes out where she's like, I want to be the main character.
I think part of me hopes that, like, she doesn't lose this in her life. There's a part of me that thinks that brings her a lot of joy, so I hope she doesn't lose it. But also, Catherine, baby, gotta live in reality sometimes.
And she does, I think. Not in these chapters.
No.
But I think it's really interesting. I wonder what the next few chapters will kind of show for that, around the fact that I think Catherine is more grounded when she is around Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And that she can engage in sort of this fanciful thinking with the knowledge that it's ridiculous.
Right. She enjoys the storytelling, teasing aspect of their relationship. and that maybe fills this energy in her that needs to be filled.
Yeah, because her brain won't focus on things in her world unless you're telling her a story, unless you're giving her information about it. This goes back to like when they were on their walks and he'd be like, okay, so you see this picturesque view? So like, this is why this is important. And this is how you would deal with the space here. And this is what makes this a good place to look out. And he's engaging with her and teaching her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know if Catherine cares so much about being taught things so much as she's like, cool, I'm engaging with my environment with information. Because Catherine would be like, oh, what a picturesque view. I bet I could throw myself off that cliff. I wonder how long I would scream for. I wonder what it would be like to land on the rocks below. Catherine will engage with her environment in whatever way she can. And her brain goes to like morbid. Sweet and morbid.
Story time.
And when Henry's around, she even mentioned in terms of like going out to the garden that she wished that Henry had gone with them so that she could understand why certain perspectives were more beautiful than others. And like this shows kind of like the absence of Henry.
Yes.
That her brain's like, their dad is a murderer. Catherine.
It's like, if that's the case, Catherine, you should probably get out of this house now.
Well, and I kind of wonder if maybe that's a direction we're going.
Right?
What are your predictions?
I think Catherine's going to keep going on this ride by herself of weirdness. And I don't think there's enough book left for there to be a murder. I'm going to nix the murder prediction. I think Catherine thinking there's been a murder will be as far as we get into there being a murder.
Okay.
And I think Henry's going to have to return and start putting the moves on her a little bit more.
Does he need to put the moves on her? Or does he just need to be like, calm down, dear?
Both. Maybe that is his move.
I think it might be. He's just like, back with to reality.
But Henry needs to come back. That's my prediction, that he will be back and they'll fall in love.
That's your prediction for the end of the book?
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you my favorite quote? I already read it out, but it's still my favorite. So it's only half the sentence because the other half is meh. But the first half is, the mere habit of learning to love is the thing. Again, Henry Tilney coming through with some good, like, insightful lines. And then, you know, there's maybe a little bit of misogyny in the like second half of that line, so I'm not reading it. But that first half of the line, great.
That is probably one of my favorites. And then I like anything where Catherine is just excited about gloomy things. So she began to talk with easy gaiety of the delightful melancholy which such a grove inspired. Catherine just really wants there to be more murder in her life. Not actually, because I don't think Catherine would actually handle being exposed to murder very well.
She wants there to be more mystery in life.
I think she just wants some excitement.
Yeah.
And by excitement, I think she's just, like I said, bored. If at any of these points they'd been like, Catherine, here's a really good book for you to read, I think Catherine would have been fine.
Oh, yeah.
Having said that, Catherine might have read something that scared her, which would have accelerated maybe some of these things.
What are we reading next, Kate?
So we're going to read 24, 25, 26.
Yay!
Thanks for listening!
We really appreciate it. You can follow us online at Austin Therapy Podcast and at Austin Therapy on Instagram. And yeah, we're hopefully getting back into posting a little more regularly. Sorry for the gap here. Yeah, just moving and sickness and life got in the way for us. But thanks for coming along on this journey with us. Let us know what you think of Catherine's silliness.
We'll see you next time. Bye.